Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to How Government Funds Flow, a very brief primer presented by the Council on Foundations Managing Director of Public Philanthropic Partnerships, Stephanie Powers. Stephanie Powers brings a plethora of experience to the Council. She was Chief of Staff at the Department of Labor. She has been Executive Director at a workforce organization. And she came to the Council to be the person in charge of a workforce fund development project. And moreover than that, Stephanie has served as a great colleague and fantastic mentor.
Okay, Shelton, this wasn't supposed to be a personal ad for me.
That's a wonderful person. So no further ado,
thank you, Shelton.
I present to you Stephanie Powers.
Shelton and I are staff in the public policy shop, and as you said, I'm the managing director for something called our Public Philanthropic Partnerships Initiative. And so in our public policy shop, we have people who work with the legislative branch, specifically in government relations. And the government relations that I engage in are the ones with the executive branch of government. And so that's kind of where we're going to focus today on our quick little primer here on kind of how government funds flow. So I tried to boil it down to be relatively simple, a little bit fun, and happy to stick around at 4:20 for a while afterwards if you want to drill down and get into any of these things. So basically, we're going to kind of take a look at how this flow goes between the federal government to the states and to local areas. It's kind of how government money goes. It goes across the federal government, goes down to the states, if you will, and then states distribute out to local, and sometimes the federal goes right to the local, and we'll show a couple of slides on this in here. But so the federal government, this is probably pretty understandable. You've all, let's see, I'm looking to see if everybody's old enough to have had civics classes. Understand the branches of government, et cetera. But, you know, there are 15 federal departments now, with Homeland Security being added in the last few years, and I kind of tacked that one on myself over there. But there are, in addition to all of the departments, you've got a lot of various independent establishments, independent agencies, and government corporations. If you can read the box on the bottom there, the CIA, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, Federal Election Commission, the General Services Administration, which is the one that buys all the pens and pencils and chairs and furniture for all the government offices, is also an independent agency. Peace Corps is also as well, the SEC. So a lot of familiar organizations and government agencies to the public. And of course, all of those agencies are in the executive branch and report basically up to the president. And there are a lot of White House offices as well, the Office of Management and Budget, which would get put into the office of the president there, that everybody flows their budgets up to OMB for approval. I just threw in a slide here. I have some data that kind of is mixed between 2011 and 2012. Some of our challenges in Washington are that we haven't had budgets for a couple of years. And so we've been operating, government's been operating on continuing resolutions. So the analysis of budgets is kind of hard to do now. A lot of comparative work that goes on between one year and the next year in terms of, you know, increases and I don't even know where we're at. I think that we're on the continuing resolution for the 2011 budget, I'm pretty sure. So, because a lot of the data that I was looking for is around the 2011, what we knew in 2011, and then there was data that were projecting 2012 and 2013, forget. I mean, I hear there's going to be a continuing resolution probably until September for this year, and the president will be unveiling his 2014 budget supposedly around March 14th is what we're hearing. So we'll see what's in that. But this gives you a kind of a sense of where the government spends its money in Fiscal year 2012 estimates indicate that the federal government spent $3.54 trillion in their budgets on a cash basis across all major categories except Social Security and Medicare. And the major categories usually include Social Security, the Defense Department, non-defense discretionary programs. There's a category called other, and then there is the interest on the debt, which of course we're hearing a lot about in terms of deficit reduction. So expenditures are classified as mandatory with payments that are required by specific laws, or discretionary with payment amounts renewed annually as a part of the budget process. So let's see, did I want to go one more? No. Yeah. So federal funds typically, now there are all kinds of caveats to things, but I think typically they flow in these ways. So there are formula grants that might go to the states, generally dictated by various legislative mandates, law. Block grants sometimes can be formula grants as well, but maybe not necessarily based on a formula. Could be an equal distribution across the country. Doesn't typically happen, but you know, there are cases where it could be. Competitive grants, which is large blocks of money that might go, it could be small amounts that go to states for specific purposes, specific initiatives that an administration might be mounting or that Congress might want to fund. So competitive grants, for instance, you're familiar with Race to the Top, the education grants were competitive grants to the states. Shelton, do you mind, can I get a little water? Contracts is another way that money flows. So these might be contracts for government infrastructure services, like within the department. A department may actually write a contract, maybe competed, usually are competed, and they're different than grants. They have different procurement rules. They have different regulations, usually different staffs who have different expertise on managing contracts. You hear a lot about the contractors with the Defense Department. They're about to, thank you, about to take some major hits, I think it sounds like, because of this thing called sequestration. So we have some big federal cuts that are going to go into effect March 1st. There are real-time program operations and contracts, task contractors that departments might hire to help them plan a meeting, for instance, because they don't always have the staff to do that. So they might be logistics contractors that are part of the way that a particular department might be delivering program services, research services. Occasionally, there's sole source for very unique services. I think sole source is less prevalent now than it used to be, in quote the old days. Discretionary grant programs are another way that money also flows from the feds. And then congressional earmarks is another way that federal money might flow. And I want to just clarify, earmarks are not necessarily not adding new money to budgets, but rather Congress takes a look at what's in a budget. And they may have a constituent group that is particularly interested in, you know, funds for the new library or building the bridge to nowhere or some of those things where they actually, Congress goes into the federal budgets that are already passed. They look for line items that money might very well fall into, and they send a directive to a department saying, we want to earmark X number of dollars for this purpose in your budget. So while there's a lot of myth, I think, about earmarks, that it's causing the budget to rise, et cetera, in sort of an indirect way, it probably is year after year. If you keep those things in the budget, you just begin to rise. But it's not like they're necessarily immediately adding money to the budget. They're going in, looking at what's there. And what happens in the federal government, too, is that that begins to compromise a lot of where the federal governments or the agencies have already had plans. And now they may be running short on money because Congress has gone in and snapped up money for things. So funds are administered, overseen by the executive branch, departments and agencies. Oh, that's where that 13, I knew I needed to change that. It's 15 departments now, and these independent agencies, as well as the White House, the White House's budget as well. And the White House, I think it's another myth, the White House does not administer funds. The White House frequently will go to departments and ask them to make room for initiatives in their budgets if it's not something that's dictated by legislation. So in some ways, it's a little bit of an earmark kind of thing, but usually the president will ask the cabinet secretaries for, is there a program that you have that you can begin to increase, for instance, these faith-based initiatives that were very prevalent and still do exist in President Bush's administration. Those offices were set up. They were probably set up with money that was already in the departments. It was an initiative of the White House. So regulations and guidelines. Just also, the federal fiscal year is October 1 to September 30. And there are some agencies that are still on the old federal fiscal year, never changed some of their programs from July 1 to June 30 as well. It gets pretty complex and sometimes and a little arcane, but for people who work in Washington, you know, this is sort of our bread and butter. We kind of are pretty facile with a lot of this stuff that seems kind of complex when folks aren't working with it day in and day out. Regulations or guidelines clarify how funding is to be spent and accounted for. They are developed by the departments and the agencies. There are usually formal RFPs, requests for proposals, NOFA, notice of federal funds availability, of funds availability, and SGAs, as a solicitation for grant applications. And it's interesting, there's no one standard way across the government from department to department. There really are there are differences, they're unique, which makes it very difficult for federal agencies from different departments to come together to collaborate on an initiative. There's been a lot of collaboration across the government during this current administration, and nothing happens quickly because people have different procurement rules and they've got different kind of RFP language and legislation. So it's a real, there's a science to trying to bring government funding streams together for collaborative work. So appropriations made very simple. So the process, it's the process by which Congress provides money for all federal spending, all federal spending. If there is no appropriation, there is no spending. So when we hear things about the government shutting down, et cetera, it's always happening, usually right at that time, about when the federal fiscal year ends, and there's no continuing resolution passed. So the continuing resolution is basically that. It just continues what they already have. So there's no increases, there's no changes in anything, and the federal agencies have to adjust to that, even if they had submitted a budget to OMB to that might have been in the president's budget. Until Congress actually passes the appropriations bill, there is no more increased spending. And if we don't have a continuing resolution, for those of you who might remember the government shutdowns back in 94, that was because we had no money, no authority to spend any money, so the agencies had to stop spending. So the president submit the basic process. President submits the bill to Congress, goes to the House. The Appropriations Committee considers it. There are 13 subcommittees, so all of the programs across the government get broken out and parceled out and sent out to those 13 subcommittees, and they work on that. And there's all that process of how a bill becomes law. Shelton, maybe you could share this with everybody. One of our little civics. And when you look at it, you'll never be able to read it, but it is an example of, you know, the complex process. Try to make it simple, but essentially, there's a lot of layers and a lot of decision making that goes into this. There could be hearings, could be public hearings, there could be battles, there could be dissension about who's really got authority, but basically those 13 subcommittee chairs are generally very powerful. You know, getting a subcommittee chair or getting a chairpersonship in the House on the Appropriations Committee is one of the most powerful positions, as well as the revenue-raising side on Ways and Means. The Budget Committee gives each subcommittee a spending figure. You'll be hearing about the budget resolution. Senator Murray just made an announcement that they are going to put a budget resolution out. She's the new chair of the Senate Finance Committee. It'll be the first time in a few years, I think. And so you'll be hearing, there's talk about that right now in Washington. There's, a lot of stuff happening. The subcommittees then determine the spending levels for all those federal programs, and then the final bills are sent for full legislative consideration from the subcommittee up to the committee, and then the committee to the full floor for passage. If the House bill is the singular bill, it goes over to the Senate, and you sort of do your how a bill becomes law kind of thing, and sent to the president for either signature or veto. So federal dollars flow to states and tribal nations. Our tribal nations are, in fact, sovereign governments. And then they go to local government. Local government can go to local government, but can also go directly to eligible NGOs, you know, non-governmental entities as well. So there could be RFPs that the Education Department or the Labor Department or Health and Human Services might issue specifically with an eligibility for community mental health centers, for instance, or LEAs, local education agencies. In fact, the Education Department is a good example. Race to the Top grant program was initiated, that was money that was going to the states, but they also did the I-3, the Investing in Innovation, if you're familiar with that. Those were able to go right to local education agencies, for instance. So federal funds flow from the states then to the locals. So sometimes there's enabling legislation that might be needed at the state level. So state legislatures have to actually accept money in many cases. I can tell you, like, for instance, vocational rehabilitation programs, if you're familiar with those go from the Department of Education to the states, but the states have to have enabling legislation because they have a matching amount on that. So they have to match the money. There's formula distribution to cities, towns, counties sometimes, competitive grants as well that the states can develop themselves. There could be other state, got to wrap it up, okay. I feel like I just started. Other state designated distributions, you know, you hear about the lottery programs. Just remember that states have their own revenue sources as well. Among them are general funds, appropriated by legislatures, various dedicated tax revenue streams, earned income from investments, even lawsuit settlements, the big tobacco lawsuit settlement. So where does federal and state money end up? Well, it ends up in your community, basically, under the tires of your car, and those bridges and roads, in the school system, and for citizen services. We'll talk, okay? Citizen services that could be very unique to each state. So essentially, this is kind of where the money meets the road, if you will. Funding is actually set, some priorities and where money gets spent are set by state constitutions. For instance, education, I live in the state of Virginia. Two major priorities that our state constitution writers gave us, and that was education, higher education, and preserving the environment. So much of our money is in our programs. That's a priority when it comes to cutting budgets. You look at what your state is requiring you to do. Local county boards and city councils oversee a lot of that federal dollar coming into those municipalities. So, you know, in some states, of course, municipalities have the power to tax citizens, but that's not true across the board. And, of course, states tax all kinds of things themselves, but it's not necessarily true of local governments as well. And many are at the mercy of the state legislatures. So nonprofits receive funds from the government through grants, contracts, sole source arrangements, sometimes dedicated funding streams. And I just put one quick slide here at the end, sort of intersection points for all of you in the philanthropic sector. Maybe matching funds for programs. You all can start coming in if you want. I'm just finishing up. Grants to governments. Impact investing is becoming a kind of a hot item now as well. You may have heard about social impact bonds, capacity building, in-kind. Alignment of investments that you have as a foundation with the public priorities. And then there's also advocacy or independent policy analysis that's another place for foundations to kind of intersect in this whole process. So if you would like to have a copy of these slides, just give me your business card. I'd be happy to send them to you. So, thank you. That was it. 20 minutes, quick and fast, how the federal government sends money down to the locals. No, it's okay. So our